Hey, Reg, how you doing, my friend? Are we all set? Let me clear my instrument. You ready to go? Cool. That's why I need to get here a few minutes earlier to get all that out of my system before we actually record the podcast and get ready. Are you ready? Let me clear my mouth here, too. I had some gum. Okay. Ready to go, my friend? Good. Finger on the trigger. Put it down in the book. Episode 413. Stars smile strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, listening is important, but it's also almost as important to get out there and tell your friends, to spread the word about the podcast. So send an email, send a text, tell anybody you know who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. What the heck? Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you're hearing and what you've heard over these last many, I won't even say few, I will say many now. We're approaching our 8th year anniversary. So you go to WGNRadio.com, you go to the podcast section, and you hit the prompt for this podcast, and then you stand back. Because you will just be blown back by the sheer power and number of podcasts waiting for you to listen to. Just keep scrolling down and loading more. What the heck? This is episode number 413. So I'll tell you, what is going on in the world today? I don't usually get political, and I'm not getting political here, but I am a citizen of the world, and the last couple of years, especially in international relations and international politics and international aggression, is starting to go off the rails here. And it's sad and it's scary more than anything. It's not just sad, it's scary because the rails are have some pretty big stakes in them. I mean, there's always skirmishes. There's always little disagreements. And there's always some military actions to some extent that happen all around the world. You know, our goal of peace on Earth and we're at peace. I mean, I don't know if the human race has ever been at peace. I think part of our DNA code is there's a competitive nature, and there's an aggressive nature to our code. I mean, we needed that aggressive behavior, and still do to some extent, to survive. The idea of surviving has certainly changed in the history of man. Before, it was just making sure that you lived and you didn't get killed by that lion or that tiger or that hippo or something else that may have been in the neighborhood. That was your survival. You see pets or animals today, they still have that instinct. They are very aware of their surroundings because their view of survival is being attacked by another predator. The human race is interesting in that we still have predators that can kill us in terms of animals and things like that. We have natural disasters. I talked a few weeks ago about nature that is really in charge. And we certainly see tragedies that happen in terms of the results of tornadoes and floods and hurricanes and things like that. But what's interesting about the human race is that we are actually our own predators, which makes us unique among the animal kingdom. Most predators do not attack their own. They don't feed on their own. They don't make their own extinct. We do that. We've certainly been able to fight off extinction by the amount of reproduction that we do. I think it's, 8 billion and counting? But that survival instinct is in the genetic code of every living thing on this earth, a plant, an ant, you name it. I didn't mean to rhyme, but I did. A plant or an ant, as big as a rubber tree plant. How's that song go? The Frank Sinatra song, High Hopes. That little ant can't move the rubber tree plant, but he's got high hopes. But no, I mean, that's part of who we are. And we certainly have done our best to become a civilization. That's where the word comes from. Resist that temptation. At the same time, while we're not maybe predators the idea of eating each other, we are predators to some extent on each other. We kill one another, and we've devised some very interesting ways of doing that. Machines, bombs. But, you know, our goal is to always try to minimize the aggressions, the military actions, the wars that we have. But there, you know, even when we consider the world is at peace, it's there's somewhere some in some and to some extent there's some conflict going on. It's an amazing thing when you think about how many people are on the earth and how many different countries there are and ethnicities there are and races that there are. And even though it seems like, wow, the world is in turmoil right now, and we're always fighting about something, even though there's always this constant, drumbeat of conflict, crime, you name it, we still have a relatively civilized society worldwide. Certainly much more than it could be when you look at the animal kingdom. So and you look for at reality at how humans get along and how we live together. It's amazing that there is not more, to be honest with you. So that's a good thing. And for the most part, over the last several years, we've been in conflict since, really. I mean, we just got out of Afghanistan a few years ago, and that was an ongoing initial military action that started in 2001 after 9/11. And of course, we went into Iraq. The United States is not above having its own skirmishes. At the same time, it's our job to be the police of the world as well, given our size and our power and our economic standing. But it seems over the last 2 years, the aggression that has taken place is is manufactured. It's not in response to anything. It's almost done for the sake of it, and that's what's troubling. What's troubling is it feels like that these forces that are beginning these wars or these attacks are doing so because they feel like they can get away with it. It feels as if we're always on we're right below the line of civility, and things are bubbling under. And some of these bad actors in the world today that are making these attacks are waiting to find the right time when they perceive a weakness. And think about it. Think about when you were in school. You had your regular teacher, right? Especially, say you're in grammar school, and you're younger, not as mature, because people are so much mature these days, even when they're adults. When you have to use the word adulting as a verb, that's a little scary, but that's another topic. So think about when you were in grammar school, and you have your regular teacher, and you know your teacher, and you have to get along with your teacher because you're with this teacher the majority of the day, even before you started to move classes. Say you were in fourth grade, third or fourth grade, before you really start doing a lot of changing classes, and you're basically with your homeroom teacher the whole day, and she's teaching you all the different subjects. And so you have to get along with that person. They're going to be grading you. You're seeing them every day. And so, you have a certain amount of respect, and you try to create a relationship. You got to be there every day. They have to see you. You have to see them, right? I mean, that's what we do in life, at our jobs, out in public, right? We don't like everybody we meet. We don't like everybody we work with, but we get along with them. We try to, as much as we can, to create at least a certain level of harmony within the office, within the home, within the neighborhood, right? But then think back to when your teacher was sick one day and you had a substitute teacher. And you knew that this teacher wasn't going to be there in the long run. Maybe the teacher was going to be out one day. Maybe she was even going to be, or he or she was going to be out one week. But you had a substitute. Right away, if you remember, right away, your mood changed. Your regular teacher had the rules of the room that probably were laid down or explained at the beginning, the expectations, the decorum. There was a certain level of authority figure there, and the teacher laid out, this is the way we do things, we're going to do this and this, and you have to turn your papers in, the whole thing. And you got used to that routine. And some of those things you might not have agreed with, but, the teacher's in charge. You can't talk. You can't talk to your friend. You can't pass notes. You can't just get up and walk out of the room. You can't throw things. I mean, think about it when you were in third, fourth grade. You're still trying to behave within a public group, So your original homeroom teacher has set down the rules of how we're going to go about our business here for the next 7 or 8 hours every day during class. And you knew the routine of the courses and which class was next, and you knew your book and you knew your lessons, and you got used to that. And everybody started to acclimate to those rules. But then, Mr. or Mrs. Teacher, regular teacher, is out today, or will be out for the next 2 days, or maybe will be out for the next week. And here we have a substitute teacher. There was a very funny comedy bit. It turned out to be a huge hit on the radio, which is, when you think about it today, and you think about the music and you think about radio, there was a time when on the top of the music charts, not in a little side category or side chart, but the number one albums, number one sold albums, for instance, were comedy albums. Bob Newhart started the trend with a number one comedy album. Down through the years, Steve Martin, his Let's Get Small album, and then later his Wild and Crazy Guy comedy album, these are spoken comedy albums, were the number one albums on the charts. Bigger than the Beatles, bigger than Led Zeppelin, bigger than the Bee Gees. Those comedy albums were number one. And one of the famous and popular comedy groups of the 70s and early 80s was Cheech and Chong. They were kind of these stoners, the stoner comedy, if you will. And they had an album, and they had a song. It was a bit, but it was a record that was played on the radio just the same in between all the music. There would be, you know, whatever songs were the big hits of the day, and all of a sudden there was this comedy bit because it was so popular. They were actually released as 45 singles, songs, the same way that musical songs were released to the radio, so were comedy songs, especially in the 60s and 70s. They were novelty hits, they were called. There was one guy named Dickie Goodman, who I think was a disc jockey, who came up with this concept of bringing up topics of the day and intercutting, splicing in little bits of songs, little samples of songs to answer his questions. He did a thing about the energy crisis, and he did a thing because Jaws was so popular, and he would say, "Oh, we are here at the energy crisis, and what do you think about this, Gold in My Ear?" And then there would be a song that would play there. You know, "What do you think about this, President Carter, President Ford, the energy crisis?" You know, and these were pop top 10 songs. Well, Cheech and Chong had a comedy bit called Sister Mary Elephant. And Sister Mary Elephant was the substitute teacher in a classroom, whether it was a grammar school or a high school classroom. And this is in the 70s, and everybody's, "Hey, man," this is the way Cheech and Chong were, "Hey, man, you know, hey, Sister Mary Elephant," you know, and she's trying to get their attention, and she, you know, the kids don't, once they see it's a substitute teacher, they're blowing off the day. And then the funny part of the bit is that the kids were not paying attention. She was talking to them, and then she would just scream to the decibels that there was "Shut up!" Where you that was the payoff. And on the radio, and even when you bought the record, they potted up the volume so high on the "shut ups" that it used to shake. Your speaker used to shake. The needle would shake. It was so loud. And that was the funny bit of it, that the kids wouldn't pay attention, and she would bellow out this big "shut up," and people would be quiet, and then they would start up again. But my point is, when a substitute teacher came, we seemed to naturally take a deep breath and look for things we can get away with. "Oh, I know that Mr. or Mrs. whatever regular teacher doesn't like us to do this, but this teacher doesn't know the rules. So what can we get away with?" So you always, there always seemed to be less of a decorum as soon as you heard substitute teacher. You just realized that you didn't need to be perhaps as obedient. You didn't have to follow the rules as much, and you tried to find little ways to get around things, because it's only a substitute teacher. I'm not going to get in trouble. No one's going to, you know, she's only here, he or she's only here for a day. So what's the difference? And I really believe that that's what's going on in the world today in many cases. When you see these skirmishes going around, and I think one of the reasons for this, why are we seeing suddenly all these aggressions going on? We're over what now? Is it 2 years? We're going on 3 years of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And now we are already past the six-month time period of the initial Hamas attack in Israel. And now we're seeing the threat of this Hamas-Palestinian-Israeli conflict potential to spread out into the whole Middle Eastern region, which could be catastrophic. That part of the world has always been a pressure cooker, has always been a tinderbox, has always been bubbling with potential conflict. And now it seems that that could be bubbling up again. It hasn't been that way in a while. Now, we were the aggressors back in the early part of this century when we went into Iraq and we were claiming that there were weapons of mass destruction. So there's always been problems. There's always been conflicts around the world. But the Middle Eastern countries, having been to Israel and Egypt, I saw firsthand, you've got conflicting worldviews. Everything is very based on religion, a very strict Orthodox view of religion. And people are living right next to one another with these imaginary borders. And it is like a pressure cooker. When I was there, as I've said many times, I never felt unsafe, but I always felt the tension. And I can only imagine, as you look at the whole map of the Middle East, so many countries, there's just tensions that are centuries old, that are passed on from generation to generation. I don't know how that will or ever can be completely solved. So the best that we can do is try to keep those tensions in check and to keep those perhaps natural inclinations to act out, if you will, at a minimum, especially in this day of rockets and nuclear weapons. If you saw Oppenheimer, if you weren't aware of the potential, destruction that atomic and nuclear weapons can have, that movie hopefully opened your eyes to it. You either learned it for the first time, but depending how young you are, since we haven't really had any major, nuclear even accidents as so much anymore. I was certainly too young for World War II, but I've seen the destruction that the hydrogen and the atom bombs have done. But Oppenheimer certainly at least was an interesting learning experience for several generations who were not around when the bomb was dropped. And ever since that bomb was dropped, the United States has been diligent to make sure that not only do we not drop it, but that no one else does. And that's why we're always trying to keep tabs on who has access to these, because if there is a foreign power or a maniacal leader, it could be the end of mankind. That threat does always hang over us. And so, as I said before, we sort of are acting as the policemen. It's ironic that we're the police of the world, since we were the only ones who ever have dropped a bomb. But at the same time, we're saying we acknowledge the destruction that it does, and we don't ever want to do that again, and we don't want anyone else to do it again. So we're in a time right now, though, where a lot of the old rules, the unwritten rules, are being broken. It's like people are seeing what they can get away with. It's as if the world right now is under the power, if you will, of a substitute teacher. The bad actors, the bad people in the world today, I think, are looking around the globe and they're saying, you know, there are not a lot of strong leaders. The regular teacher is out. The substitute teachers are in. And we might be able to get away with some stuff that we never used to get away with, or things that we would think about. For instance, the fact that Israel proactively bombed a site in Damascus, in Syria, which is Iranian territory, and then Iran came back and responded. And as I'm recording this, Israel has not responded again. That may change any minute, sadly. But those were kind of unwritten rules that those two major powers would not engage because of their capabilities, because of their military and their weaponry. Things could get dangerous, and even worse, not only between those two, but then it could spark a whole region. As I said, all these countries, many of these countries are right next to each other, and they are century-old enemies, and they are coexisting. They're not living together; they're coexisting, living that close. They're putting up with each other. And you know how it is if you have a neighbor or someone in the neighborhood or even a coworker that sits next to you or something, you know, that you don't really get along with, you know, you try to be cordial, but you know there's a tension and you try your best, and sometimes there's a little disagreement and, you know, you tread lightly and you coexist and you go about your business. And that's really the way the Middle East seems to go, and as well as the whole world. It shouldn't be just say the Middle East, because look at once again with Russia and some of these former countries of the Soviet Union who have been over the last almost 30 years have been trying to establish their own identities and their own democracies or their own governments. And now you have a leader like Putin who wants to basically resurrect the domination and the power of the old Soviet Union. That was the system that he grew up in and lived in and felt thrived in and generated great national pride through. The Soviet Union was one of the world's leading countries during that time. The rest of the world wasn't too crazy about what the Soviet Union was doing, but the Russian people and the Soviet Union, at least, certainly the leaders, were happy. They were on the world stage. They were affecting things. And Putin is trying to bring that back in some way in this new generation. And those aggressors, as I said, it seemed like they were just lying in wait. They were waiting for a lull. They were waiting for the world's leaders and the world's problems to distract the police or the authority figure, namely the United States, away from them, because there's other issues going on, and then they could start to just make little things. Like I said, you know, when the substitute teacher came in, you know, it wasn't like you were going to take over the class, right? But maybe you were talking to your friend next to you, or you were playing tic-tac-toe when you were supposed to be, you know, reading a book or in study hall or something. You know what I mean? It's not big stuff, but you were trying to get away with something that ultimately could lead to that. Because if someone else saw you playing tic-tac-toe, then they're like, well, why am I reading this assignment that the substitute teacher gave me? Let me play tic-tac-toe. Or let me talk. Or let me do something else. Or let me draw. I mean, whatever it is. You wouldn't do that or try to get away with that with your regular teacher because they were the authority figure that you respected and you had to follow the rules. But when the substitute teacher was in, when you felt that there was a lack or at least a drop down in the authority, that's when you felt like you can get away with something. And it seems like that's what's going on in the world today. We've got, you know, I remember a couple of years ago on my New Year's show, one of my hopes for the new year was that the war in Ukraine would be done. And at that time, it wasn't even a year old. And I was hoping, okay, enough of this already. It's been going on for 8 months or whatever it was at the time. Hopefully this will be settled and we can move on. And these people, you know, these cities won't be destroyed. These people won't be in such despair. And we can get some semblance of order back, whatever that means in the world. And here we are now going on 3 years. And that war doesn't look like it's any closer of being settled in one way or the other. Ceasefire. One side winning, whatever it is, that side, that conflict doesn't seem like it's any closer to being ended today in April of 2024 than when it started. And it's sad to say that at the beginning of 2025, that may be my hope for the new year, that we can finally settle the Russian-Ukraine conflict. But I don't know. And then, of course, we have this new one that came in toward the end of last year, which has now become a major world issue. People on both sides. And now even many more people sympathizing, even though Israel was initially attacked by the Hamas terrorist group. Israel's response in Gaza and around the area to rid the area of Hamas terrorists has taken a toll on many innocent people and created a devastating reality in terms of shelter and food and illness and injury. And now, in the midst of all that, and hostages, let's not forget about that. There's still more than 100 people still kept hostage for more than 7 or 8 months. I don't know how that, I don't know. I mean, how do people get their medicine? What if there's older people that need to have a regular prescription of medicine? What happens? I mean, are they still alive? I don't know. So that situation is so chaotic and so muddled. And there's understandable outrage on both sides of the issue now. You can look at it from both sides. So that looks like it's a quagmire. And that's going to continue. And now a new wrinkle. A major power, Iran, who may or may not have nuclear weapons, is potentially involved, which, if that's the case, the whole region is in danger of becoming one big area of conflict with country versus country right next to one another. I mean, that's a tinderbox. But I think a lot of this is happening because those aggressors, and they're always there, have felt, when they're looking around and they're going, you know what? I think the world right now is being ruled by a lot of substitute teachers. I guess when I've been thinking about this for a while, ever since Putin made the aggressive act of of attacking and invading Ukraine. As to, well, why now? Why didn't he? I mean, he's been in power for 20 years. Why now? What changed? Why did he feel that he could get away with it? And he, to some extent, has gotten away with it. We don't know what the ultimate conclusion of the Russian-Ukraine conflict will be. Will there be a ceasefire? Will there be a compromise? Will Russia be able to actually possess some parts of Ukraine that it invaded now since its invasion? Or will they be pushed back militarily and Ukraine bring back and retain and regain all the land that Russia invaded? And then, as I've said on this podcast before, the rubble and destruction that has been already inflicted on the people in the area, that's going to take 20 years to rebuild. So this isn't just like, oh, well, that the, oh, okay, say Ukraine fought Russia back. Okay, fine. But who's going to rebuild Ukraine? Not Ukraine. They don't even have enough money and funds and capabilities to fight this war. We're basically supplying it. Who's going to rebuild it? It's rubble right now. It's not livable. Wherever the refugees and the former people that lived in Ukraine went, if they want to come back home, what could they come back to? Rubble? Someone's going to have to clean that. Cleaning it alone is going to take decades. Rebuilding the infrastructure, the building, the streets, the services, the electricity. That's a multi-billion dollar, regardless, even if Russia takes it over. What are they going to do? Just leave the rubble? I don't know if we ever think about long term. I don't think we do, sadly. We are an impetuous race. But when I remember when Putin first did the invasion, as this went on, I'm like, well, why would he decide to do this now? And I just started to look around, and I'm saying, you know, I think he thinks that no one's paying attention, or if they are, he's really not afraid. He feels he can get away with it. He feels there's a substitute teacher in charge. And I'm not just talking about the United States. I'm talking about the world. Think about the world stage right now. Think about the leaders of the leading countries in this world. There's Joe Biden in the United States. Whether you are Biden supporter or not, I'm not getting into that. But it's impossible not to acknowledge that he's an 81 or 82-year-old leader, and he doesn't project the kind of strength and vitality that someone in their 50s or even 60s or even 40s would be able to project to the world. In many ways, most of the countries in this world react to strength and weakness. And they prey on the weakness. And I'm just saying that's the reality. Even if you say, yeah, but he's been, okay, fine. But their perception is there's an older guy in office who has got his hands full with what he's doing in his own country. His own country is divided. He's got his own problems with immigration and things like that. If he takes his eye off the ball, I could get away with something. But here's my question. Offhand, don't look it up. Don't look it up. Just offhand. Can you tell me the name of the leader of Germany right now? Can you tell me the name of the leader of the United Kingdom? Who's the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom? Can you name the person right now off the top of your head? Who's the head of Japan right now? Ally of ours. You might know the leader of France. He's been in the news sometime. But I was just in France last year. Believe me, he is not popular even within his own country, more or less on the world stage. Who's the leader of Canada? You might know that one because he's a dreamboat. Right? Justin Trudeau. Very unpopular right now, even in his own country. My point is, and I'll give you a little thing. First of all, Germany, it's Olaf Scholz. In France, it's Emmanuel Macron. In the UK, it's Rishi Sunak. Those are the main Western leaders, if you will. The allies, democracies. Now, do any of those names, the fact that you might not even be able to name them at all, but even the ones that you do know, are any of those names, are any of those leaders inspirational? Are any of those leaders able to change opinion and move and be decisive? And yes, which is a part of leadership, instill some fear into those who might want to be the aggressors in the world? Do you think any of those are? Those people don't even have a full reign and a full support of their own countries. Most of those countries, most of the major countries in the world are in chaotic situations. The leaders are having a hard time even governing and ruling and leading their own countries. Putting them on the world stage for another country to either be inspired or respected by them? If their own country doesn't, why would someone else? Is there, for instance, in the world today, is there a world leader that is comparable in terms of the respect, in terms of the influence, in terms of the leadership qualities of, say, Winston Churchill? Who's today's Winston Churchill? Who's today's Franklin Delano Roosevelt? Who's today's Harry Truman? Who's today's John Kennedy in terms of pure inspiration? Who's today's Ronald Reagan in terms of pure idealism? You don't have to be a fan or of any of those leaders, but you cannot deny, whether you disagreed with them politically, what their views were, how they went about their business, you can debate all those world leaders. Anybody who puts themselves out into the public arena opens themselves up for criticism. That's part of the job. So you don't have to have respected FDR or Winston Churchill or Ronald Reagan or John F. Kennedy or Harry Truman, right? Harry Truman dropped the bomb. You say, I hate Harry Truman for one reason. He dropped the atom bomb. So I don't like Harry Truman. You might like FDR because, oh well, he created, a progressive agenda and welfare and social security and things like that. Well, I don't like that. That was too progressive for me. That's fine. You could also not like Ronald Reagan. You say Ronald Reagan was a harsh ideologue whose goal was to destroy the Soviet Union at any cost. I understand all the arguments pro and against all those leaders I talked about. Today's Winston Churchill. Who's today's Winston Churchill? Who's today's Maggie Thatcher? Very polarizing figure, especially in the UK. But what was her nickname? The Iron Lady. No leader is beloved by everyone. But some leaders are at least respected. And in ways, it is necessary. Even in today's new wave, new age world, to be feared. Because some countries only react to weakness and fear. So, who today on the world stage, who is the leader of a major country, commands either the respect, the influence, the leadership, and yes, the fear around the world by other countries? Who is inspiring other countries? Have you ever seen, go online if you've never seen it, John F. Kennedy, as I said, you know, Kennedy is a very controversial president. He was only president for a couple of years to begin with. He was young. There's a lot, you know, he is remembered more for his youth, for his inspiration, his potential, and then sadly his tragic mass assassination. There's no question that he stood up to the Russians during the Cuban Missile Crisis, but he also made some big mistakes too in a lot of areas. So the Kennedy legacy is very mixed. But there's no question that he was a popular leader, charismatic leader. Of the people I talked about today, Biden, Macron, Schultz, Sunak, who's a charismatic leader who can inspire people, whether they like him or not? Say what you will about Ronald Reagan, but you cannot deny when he gave that speech in front of the Berlin Wall and said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." There was a groundswell. Go online and see when John F. Kennedy went and visited Berlin. This is a U.S. president in a foreign country. The reaction that he got in Berlin was the reaction that the Beatles would get at Shea Stadium times 1,000. And this is a foreign country reacting to a foreign leader with unbridled enthusiasm and respect as for his leadership or his inspiration. I don't think there's any leader on the world stage today that is inspiring that kind of allegiance or respect. And I think that's why the world is now in kind of this chaotic state, because it's as if we've got a bunch of substitute teachers in charge. About a month or so ago, I've had this thought in my mind, shared it with a few friends, but then I saw a poll that was taken. It was back in February. And I saw it in the New York Times. And there was a poll taken of the approval ratings of the major world leaders around the world. Approval ratings. Now, this is what other countries thought of the leaders around the world. Olaf Scholz of Germany had a 73% disapproval rating. This is disapproval, not approval. These are the major leaders of some of the major countries in this world that we look to be strong and to oversee their regions and to keep things in relative organized chaos. That's the best we could do in the world, right? Organized chaos. So the leader of Germany, Olaf Scholz, these are disapprovals, not approval ratings, disapproval ratings. 73% disapproval, which means, let me get my abacus out. 27% approve. These are in developed democracies, the democracies around the world that we need to be strong, to be inspirational. In a world that seems to be going out of control every 3 or 4 months. Now, we know that President Biden's disapproval ratings have been very high. His approval ratings are in the 30s now, which is the lowest for any president since World War II. But once again, on the international stage, Biden is actually doing better. So the Germany's leader has a 73% disapproval rating. I told you before, Emmanuel Macron, I was in France last year. I was just talking to cab drivers and people. He's not very popular. He basically won because his opponent was so crazy that people said, well, we can't vote for that person. His disapproval rating is 71%, which means his approval rating is only 30. The disapproval rating of the leader, the prime minister of the UK, is 66% disapproval, which means 34% approve. I told you, Justin Trudeau might be a dreamboat, but his approval rating or disapproval rating is 59%, meaning 40% of the people don't approve. When this was taken, Joe Biden's disapproval rating was 54%, putting him at 46%, but we know that that's usually been lower and he's in the lower 30s. Those are the leading democracies in the world. Those are the leaders of the democratic world, the democracies that hopefully are being the watchdogs in some cases the police of the rest of the world to make sure that things don't go crazy, to make sure that those aggressors out there are kept in check. There isn't one major leader of those countries who have even close to a 50-50. When the United States is perceived as being weak, that's when other countries perceive that they can get away with things. When the world leaders, the United States, you can't deny that we have a major influence on what happens in the world. But why do you think Hamas felt that it was able to attack Israel when it did? Because they knew that at the time, Netanyahu was having some problems taking care of his own, getting his old government together as prime minister. So they saw weakness. They didn't see the authoritarian regular teacher figure there. They saw a substitute teacher. They can get away with something. And so when we look around at the world today, it's a scary place. It's a turbulent place. It's a very unstable place. And it seems that we're in this situation because for whatever reason, whether the leaders don't exist, whether the strong, inspirational leaders don't exist right now, whether the strong, inspirational leader types are hesitant to get involved in politics, in governing, because of social media and the way every move someone makes is overanalyzed and criticized. Why should I even get involved? Or we are voting for people for the wrong reasons. That we're voting for people not based on competency or results or leadership, but other intangibles. Whatever the reason is, clearly the world right now doesn't have that one inspirational guiding leader. Yes, there's always leaders that are popular or not, but at least they have the respect of other countries. And I don't think there's anyone on the world stage now that anyone has a legitimate, total respect and inspirational feeling toward, to say that this person at least can lead us. This person is decisive and strategic looking and a visionary, and we want to follow him. We want to be in with him or her. And so, you know, there's an old adage that you get the kind of government that you elect, that you deserve. And I'm wondering, as I look around at many of our leaders, local leaders, national leaders, and international leaders, are we voting for people for the right reasons? Are we voting them because of their gender, because of their race, whether they're good looking or not? How are we voting for these people? Are we voting for truly the people that have, once again, to bring up Ronald Reagan, whether you like Reagan or not, Ronald Reagan ran in 1980 with pretty much three agenda items. And I was only a teenager at the time. I couldn't even vote in the election. But I remember this. I told you Jimmy Carter was a disastrous president. I know that there are a lot of people, especially in the media, that are trying to rewrite history, especially because he's in his 90s now, and he's done some great work humanitarily after his presidency. But when he was the president, he was a failure in terms of results, not about the soul or the whatever he brought to the country. No, I'm talking about results. We had high interest rates. We had unemployment. We had energy problems. We had hostages taken in Iran. There was a malaise in the country. And Ronald Reagan came in, and the Russians were building their nuclear arsenals. And they were expanding the Soviet Union. And Ronald Reagan came in with just three ideas. I'm gonna bring patriotism back to the country. I'm going to end this malaise that Americans don't believe that we're the best country in the world. I'm going to bring back American pride. I'm going to put the Russians in check. And ultimately, I'm going to do what I can to destroy communism from spreading. And I'm going to kickstart the economy with tax cuts and deregulations. Once again, you can disagree with all of those principles or those agenda items, but that's what he came in to the election saying. Those were his three things. And ultimately, whether you like him or not, whether you like what he did or how he did it, he achieved those three things. He didn't even know how he would do it or if he could do it. But those were the ideas that he ran on, that he believed in, and that he inspired people to follow him with. And he went to his cabinet and his advisors and said, I don't know how we're going to do these things, but these are the three things we're going to do. We're not going to do 1,000 things. I'm not going to promise 1,000 things because you can't do it. I'm going to focus on 2 or 3 main things that I think are the main problems that we have in this country, and those are the three I'm going to solve. And as I said before, you can agree with those three things or disagree with them. You can hate Reagan. I'm not putting him up as a great president or a horrible president. I'm just telling you the facts. That's what he ran on. And when he was done, he achieved those three things. Communism ultimately fell about a year after he was done, but he worked with Gorbachev. He gave the speech, tear down this wall. He built up our nuclear arsenal to match Russians' buildup because, as I said, majority of countries around the world only respond to power and weakness. And Reagan, whether you liked him or not, exuded a sense of power, a sense of determination. He scared them. Whether it was real or not, many of our leaders today are afraid to put a stake in the ground. Everybody's worried about how people view them. Reagan said, "This is what I'm doing." And so when I'm looking at the world stage today, I don't see anybody. Forget about, once again, Reagan's politics, whether you like him or not. I'm talking about charisma. I'm talking about determination. I'm talking about leadership. Right now, the world is devoid of a Winston Churchill, is devoid of an FDR, is devoid of a Harry Truman, is devoid of a John F. Kennedy. Hopefully, as we move forward, not just in this country, but around the world, we will start to elect people that have a true leadership capability, who hopefully, and hopefully we can attract new people who might be great leaders, but who are hesitant to get into the political game because our country is so divided, but we need someone. And it is in many ways the United States responsibility because of our place in the world, the place of our democracy in this world. It is incumbent on us. We need to find leaders with vision, with charisma, with the ability to unite people, and the ability to inspire confidence and leadership, not only in our country, but around the world. Because if we don't do that, if you think things are unstable and chaotic now, they'll only get worse. in the next 2 years, 4 years, 8 years, 10 years, we can find that leader, not only in this, in our country, but in other strong countries around the world. Because if not, the chaos of today will be tenfold in the chaos of tomorrow. I don't know how we solve this, but I think the important part of any solution is acknowledging the problem. So maybe that's where we start right now. We have to realize and address and admit that right now, the world is without a true inspirational leader. And it's our job to find that person quickly. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 413. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.